This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk on the hotline right now. Fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And Mike is brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding, your hometown roofing expert. Mike, it appears now that we can all just be prepared to welcome our new quarterbacking overlord, Aaron Rodgers. It appears to be now truly, as you said earlier in the week, a matter of when, not a matter of if, for Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. This union of two I would call Tiffany brands in recent NFL history.
Yeah, it sure seems that way, and this is typical for Aaron Rodgers, where nobody knows exactly what he's going to do, when he's going to do it, how he's going to do it. He seems to like that. That's his thing. He builds mysteries, and nobody knows anything about what he's going to do, and anybody who says they know what he's going to do is getting bad information, and I don't buy all that. I think he's naive to believe that he has this hold on his entire representation team, that no one ever says anything. It's human nature for everyone to tell one person something they're not supposed to tell anyone, and then they tell one person when you tell them not to tell anyone, and then they tell one person. That's how things get around. So it sure seems like that's what's going on. I was told it's a safe bet he's going to be picking the Steelers. At this point, who else would it be unless he waits to see if J.J. McCarthy face plants for the Vikings or just decides to wait and see if a quarterback on a Super Bowl contender suffers a serious season-ending injury at some point between now and whenever. So it sure feels like the Steelers, and it feels like typical Aaron Rodgers to not know when it's going to happen.
Mike, I will say, though, you have led the charge on Pro Football Talk. You've kind of responded to, I think, taking the temperature of Steelers fans via a poll question. You've definitely led the charge of, hey, Steelers fans, you might not like this, but you know, it's kind of like learn to eat your vegetables. You should like it because it's going to be better than you think. Just what has you convinced that Rodgers can still succeed at a level maybe previous Steelers quarterbacks post Roethlisberger have not succeeded if he does come here?
Because those quarterbacks post Roethlisberger have not done very well. And even though Rodgers isn't as mobile as he used to be, he still has an incredible arm that is able to generate force, velocity, accuracy on the football. He's got a way of throwing the ball that makes a sound that people haven't heard from other people who throw the football. And to the extent there are any misgivings about Rodgers internally, the moment he walks out on the field and throws one pass, those are gone. And once he starts playing games and winning games, now there's no guarantee the Steelers are automatically going to become a Super Bowl contender, but they'll at least be as relevant as they've been in recent years. How could they not be when they've been relevant with subpar quarterback play And that's why I think the wins will change people's minds. And the best example, and I know it's unpopular to say this in Pittsburgh now because it's 15 years later, but when all that stuff was going down with Roethlisberger in Georgia in 2010, I mean, God, I tuned into some show then. I'm not sure whether it was this station or a different one, but my God, it was like Big Ben gripe fest, and people were calling in with every complaint under the sun, and everybody was coming out of the woodwork, and they were going to trade him, and it was awful. And then they got to the Super Bowl that year, and it was never discussed again. It was just gone. So any doubts about Rodgers, it's fine to have them. It's not abnormal. But once he starts playing and once he starts winning, they're all going to go away. The flip side, though, is if they don't win, they're not going to go away.
How do you think he and Mike Tomlin will coexist? Because that's two big egos, and I don't know where you come down on this. No one can convince me that Robert Saleh did not lose his job because Aaron Rodgers wanted him to lose his job, or was at least one of the people who did not want to have Robert Saleh as the head coach anymore. Mike Tomlin is not Robert Saleh in terms of his standing in the NFL, not close to it, obviously. How do you think that will actually work with those two as far as getting along and playing nice together?
Hey, you make a great point. After Saleh was fired, Rodgers was never really asked any tough questions about it by the rough and tumble New York media, and they got mad at me for pointing it out. It's like, use some of that on him. That's good. Get mad. Ask him pointed questions. What did he know? When did he know it? Why aren't you saying, I'm upset that my coach is gone? It's going to derail our season. How do we come back from this? So I agree with you that there was something weird about it. I don't know that he wanted him out, but he sure didn't act like somebody who wanted him to stay. I think that Tomlin understands how to deal with Rodgers for at least 1 year. And I think Rodgers realizes things aren't looking good for him post-Packers. He needs, and there's like a mutual benefit that flows from this. Tomlin needs to get to the playoffs and win at least one game. Rodgers needs to finish his career with a team that gets to the playoffs. He hasn't been there since 2021. He hasn't been there since 2021. You can't walk off into the sunset. You're limping off into the sunset if you go 4, 5, 6 years without getting to the postseason to cap your career. So they need each other. That's why they're going to get along. They need each other at this point.
Do you think if they did do that, they got to a playoff appearance, wild card game, and they won it, and then who cares about, you know, they get crushed in the next round, so what? Do you think that would be viewed by most people broadly, nationally, now forget about Pittsburgh, as a successful year if they win a singular playoff game together?
Yes, unless they have like the one seed, or they're regarded as one of the top teams and they're favored in the divisional round game and they lose that. I think how you go out becomes important to what was expected when we get to January. So, you know, if they do what they've been doing the past decade, fighting, scratching, clawing, getting to the playoffs, and win a wild card game. Hey, we did better with Aaron Rodgers than we've otherwise done. It doesn't put out the fire. It just delays it. But it would be relative to what we've seen since they beat the Chiefs on that Sunday game that was moved from afternoon to evening because of an ice storm and sparked the Chiefs to say, enough.
We need Patrick Mahomes. Right.
Right. That was the trigger game for, you know, multiple Super Bowl championships. But yeah, I think that if it's like what we've seen since that night, it is a success relative to recent performance.
Mike, Russell Wilson, obviously with the Giants now, a deal that could pay him up to $21 million if he hits a bunch of incentives. Instantly the funniest quarterback room in the league, putting he and Jameis Winston together for those pregame speeches with Tommy Cutlets potentially in the background doing his usual gesticulations. Do you get the sense from people you've talked to that the Giants got sick of waiting for Rodgers, or that they found out that Rodgers really had no interest? Like, how did that go down where they just made the decision, all right, we're going to move on to Wilson? Was it entirely Rodgers told them thanks but no thanks, or they just got tired of playing the waiting game?
I think there was an urgency. I haven't heard this, but I think common sense suggests there was an urgency that was beginning to kick in and they needed to do something. There was a desperation. Chris Sims, who does PFT Live with me, grew up a Giants fan. His dad is Phil Sims, and that's understandable. And we'd talk about it on our show, and he's like, yes, I'm very nervous. We have one guy under contract. It's Tommy DeVito. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what we're thinking about doing. And the Jameis Winston Monday or Friday, excuse me, and then Russell Wilson on Tuesday, those two moves take some of the steam out of it. It does give them a chance to evaluate the quarterback class in the draft a little more objectively without bias, without rooting for, hey, we really need to like a quarterback with number three because we don't have any. But you're right, it creates a very intriguing quarterback room. And you've got one guy who has evolved to a point where he is notoriously authentic. He always is who he is. He says what he says, and he never pretends to be anybody other than who he is. And then you got the other guy who is never himself. It's always hidden. He's always playing the role of how an NFL quarterback should act. And I don't know that it ends well for Russell Wilson. Unless he plays better than he played last year, and I wrote this today at PFT, did the Giants just like not talk to the Steelers? Did they not pay attention to what happened last year?
I know.
Down the stretch, five straight losses, average margin of 13.2 points in those games. Did they not do any homework? I remember last year, Mike Tomlin was very proud of the fact that he didn't do any homework with the Broncos. Remember when he was asked that question? He was almost kind of upset that he was asked that question. Like, why didn't the Giants? These teams are connected. Why didn't the Giants make a few phone calls? And if they did, why did they sign this guy?
I mean, I don't think either guy is a great player by any stretch, but I think Winston offers more to a team than Wilson does. But I will say this, Mike, by way of continuing this Wilson conversation and spinning it back to the Steelers, they ought to hope that he plays great and holds off Winston all year and hits some of these incentives, because they could be looking at now with Wilson, with Fields, with Dan Moore, suddenly a boatload of pretty nice comp picks in that 2026 draft. That's the other kind of thing that people here are now starting to pay a lot of attention to, that they could be gearing up with a lot of capital to make a big quarterback move in next year's draft in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, look, it's a complicated formula that nobody seems to truly understand, including the NFL. For the past couple of years, they put out the initial slate of compensatory picks, and then a few days later, they have to say, oh, wait, oh, we got it wrong. We got to move them around.
Wonderful system they've got there.
I don't know. I haven't even tried to figure out how that works, but generally, if you lose more than you sign during the relative window, and it's unrestricted free agents whose contracts expired elsewhere, yes, if you lose more than you signed, you're going to come away with some picks, and it's going to help you the next year in the draft. And given that all they've done is sign Mason Rudolph, who would, you know, I mean, his contract comparable to Jameis Winston. So, well, wait a minute, I got my quarterback screwed up. Regardless, they've added Mason Rudolph as an unrestricted free agent and lost Fields and Wilson. So there's a balance there, and it gets more complicated, and it makes your brain melt as I'm making my own melt as I talk about.
Well, I want to leave you with this, because, you know, Mike, my favorite thing to do is ask you about some sort of maybe potentially arcane thing in the league, but something that I feel like is right up your alley. I saw on PFT today that onside kicks back at any time are back as a proposal. As you pointed out, the Chiefs getting killed in the Super Bowl, they can't even execute one until the fourth quarter by the rules, and so now that might be back on the table. My question is actually this, though. Why isn't that movement for a 4th-and-15 play from inside your own territory to keep the ball if you convert? Why does that never pick up more steam? Because I feel like a lot of football fans would rather see a football play than an onside. I'm not saying an onside kick isn't a football play, but you know what I mean. It's something where the offense and the defense are duking it out and not a very specialized unit attempting a very specialized kind of play.
Years ago, when the NFL was getting ready to stage the Super Bowl at MetLife Stadium, Roger Goodell was making the rounds, and he met with CNBC, and they asked him, who do you root for? And he said, I root for the team that's trailing, which makes sense. You want an exciting game. You don't want people to change the channel or not care. And so you give devices to the team that's trailing so that they can get back into the game. So I'm with you. I don't know why they haven't gone down this path. There's talk about it. It never goes anywhere. There's no proposal for it this year. In past years, there's been a proposal. Competition committee didn't go there. None of the teams went there. The UFL is changing theirs a little bit this year as it relates to the opportunity to try to close that gap and come from behind. And I think it's something that the NFL does need to consider, because the onside kick is a dead play. And it makes it very, very difficult for the team that's trailing to retain possession. And there are unintended consequences of the 4th-and-15 play, or at least foreseeable consequences if they would bother to sit down and brainstorm all the things that could go haywire. But it at least allows the team that's trailing a real opportunity to maintain possession of the ball, and it feels like the onside kick no longer does that, at least not very much.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, PFT Live. Always appreciate it, Mike. Talk again next week.
Order your Rodgers jerseys. Oh, get ready.
Here, 8, right? He won't get 12. They won't give him 12. They wouldn't do that to Terry Bradshaw.
Right. Oh, and he specifically refused to take Joe Namath's number. Namath was offering it to him, so he won't do that. If 8's available, he'll be 8 again.
Mike, we'll talk again next week. Thank you.
See you, buddy.